All right, well, today we're starting 2013 with something that I'm really excited about. You know, we wrapped up 2012 by having the fourth quarter challenge where we went through the whole Bible in 3 months. And that was amazing. That was really cool. This year we're slowing it down in 2013, and we are starting today going through the sayings of Jesus. Just some of the things that Jesus said. Our goal is to sit at his feet. After all, we call ourselves Christians, and it seems like Jesus should have a big part in our lives. Listening to what he said should be a big part. And a lot of times as we go through the Bible, we get a lot of it, some of their prophecies about Jesus, and Paul wrote 14 books reflecting on Jesus, but sometimes it's really good just to go to Jesus and to listen to him. So this morning and for the next 52 weeks, each week we'll focus on one of the sayings of Jesus, and I'm excited about this. This week, we will be in Matthew chapter 11, and one of my favorite things that Jesus said, Matthew 11, verses 28, 29, and 30. And if you've come through a really harried holiday and it's just been, you look back at 2012 and go, oh man, I just hope I don't have another year like that. I hope those problems are behind me and I can start fresh. Then certainly you will relate to what Jesus says here. When he says in verse 28, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. If you feel burdened down, if you feel overwhelmed, if you feel like you're fighting to stay alive, then this word to a tired, weary soul that Jesus says, come here, I'll give you rest. That word for rest means refreshment, a healthy pause, a recreation, a regeneration. Jesus says, I'll give this to you. Now, to understand anything in the scriptures, it's helpful to get the context. Now, we don't know, for instance, what happened immediately before Jesus said this, but what we know is Matthew, inspired by the Holy Spirit, decided to assemble things that happened and things that Jesus has said together for a particular purpose and reason. So whenever we read any passage of Scripture, it's wise for us to look at the context and say, okay, what are we talking about here? What is this addressing? So chapter 11 of Matthew it's an interesting context in light of these scriptures. It starts out with John the Baptist being in prison, about to be killed. And he's beginning to wonder, this hasn't gone the way I thought it was going to go. John's job was to introduce Jesus as the king, as the Messiah. And Malachi had prophesied about John the Baptist, the one who would be the forerunner to Jesus. So John did his job. He was a scruffy guy living out in the wilderness, proclaiming to people, there's a king who's coming. You need to repent. Because the one that I'm telling you about is this guy. And he points at Jesus. And he said, I'm not even worthy to tie his shoes. So then Jesus comes on the scene and begins his ministry after John baptized him. But it wasn't going the way John thought. John had faithfully done what God had called him to do, and yet, to John's mind, it was starting to look like, I don't think this is working. Because here Jesus is just walking around with a ragtag bunch of losers. He's not becoming king. And in the meantime, I'm in prison, and I'm about to die. So what's going on? So he sends, in the beginning of chapter 11, he sends two of his disciples to, and imagine being John the Baptist's disciple. Jesus had his disciples, John the Baptist had his. So imagine being a part of the people who were following John the Baptist, and he's in jail. And the guy that he said he's introducing as king he's just on his way to being killed as well. And so they were discouraged, no doubt. So they sent the disciples, the two disciples of John came to Jesus and said, John the Baptist wants to know, are you the coming one? Are you the guy? Or should we start looking around for plan B? Should we start trying to find some other option if you're not the guy? And Jesus takes this occasion, and if you read through it, he talks about John the Baptist. He says he's the greatest guy ever. He was amazing. But he said, look, John the Baptist came, and he was fasting. He was just eating locusts and honey and testifying, and he never drank wine. And they accused him of being demon-possessed. So he said, here I come. I'm hanging out with people. I'm drinking. I'm eating. And they accuse me of being a glutton, a pig. They accuse me of being a drunkard. They accuse me of hanging out with sinners. So Jesus goes, we're in different predicaments, but I get how you feel. John was rejected, and so am I, for opposite reasons. And then he begins to, at that point, he shifts gears after talking about John and his rejection in verse 19. And then in verse 20, Jesus just is, you could just tell he's ranting. He's thinking about the fact that, look what I've done, and I am being accused of all this stuff. And so he turns his attention on the cities where he had taught the most, where he had healed the most, where he had done the greatest work. And he began to pronounce woes on those cities. Chorazin, Bethsaida, Capernaum, there where he spent so much of his time there at the top of the Sea of Galilee. And he declares to them, man, if Sodom and Gomorrah had seen what you've seen, they would have repented in sackcloth and ashes. And I'm telling you what, because I have spent so much energy ministering to you, because I have healed people, because I have fed you, because I have done these teachings to you and you've rejected me, you're going to face a fate that's worse than Sodom and Gomorrah. You get the idea, Jesus was kind of having a rough day. And so he lashes out, but it's ironic that the people who he tried the hardest to reach rejected him. As John said in John 1, he came unto his own, and his own received him not. You know how that feels? Have you ever had a time in your life where there's someone that you would have given your life to see their life saved, and they just blew you off? Maybe it was a member of your own family that you're just going, this is the person. If I could make one person come to heaven with me, it would be this person. So you go all out and you share with them and you pray for them, and then you feel like, man, the people who I've done the most for do not appreciate my efforts. They turn on me. They see me as their enemy. It's a thankless job to do the works of God. And so that's kind of where Jesus was at here. But then in verse 25, he shifts gears a little bit and he begins to thank God. And look, he says, I thank you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that you have hidden these things from the wise and prudent and have revealed them to babes. Even so, Father, for so it seemed good in your sight, all things have been delivered to me by my Father, and no one knows the Son except the Father, nor does anyone know the Father except the Son and the one to whom the Son wills to reveal him. He's reflecting on all of these people who had rejected him in the context of John the Baptist and Jesus going, I know how you feel, man. They don't appreciate what I'm doing. It doesn't seem like it's working out the way I thought it would. But now he's just going, but God, I thank you for the few simple-minded people who actually hear what I say. Even though I'm surrounded by just a handful of guys with almost no potential, and the people that I have spent so much time talking to, the religious leaders who should have completely understood what I was about and what I was doing, they're so smart they've rejected me. And sometimes, Father, it's just like me and you. We understand each other. And then there's some really simple-minded people who are trying to follow along with us. Jesus is at this point relating very much to how John the Baptist felt. And he's just going, okay, Father, I'm thankful for this ragtag bunch of people that actually kind of believe in me, and yet they really don't understand. And Father, it's just like it's me and you. Most of the people that we are trying to reach, we can't reach. And it's easy to get worn out. And it's in that context that now Jesus says, introducing to not anyone necessarily, but to everyone and to each of us, if you are relating to this burnout, if you're relating to this feeling, come to me. The word come, the phrase come to me, means literally, it's a command, stand by my side. Come alongside me, get close to me, understand and relate to me as I understand and relate to you. Come here, man, I want to put my arm around you. Let's really talk. Let's talk about what really matters. And who he's talking to, those who labor, first of all. And the word there means to be completely exhausted from work. It's like, I have labored. The original root word of this is to be beat up, is just to beat on yourself or to be cut. It's like, ah. So he says, you people who have been working so hard. He's not talking to people that don't do anything. Jesus never invites people who don't do anything to come to him, but he goes to the people who are trying hard because they are at least on the right track. And he says, you who are worn out from your labors, come to me. But not only those who labor and are worn out from their labor, but those who are heavy laden. The word there is a word that they used when a wagon or a horse or a ship was overloaded past its limits. When you're doing shipping, you understand that the more you can cram on a vehicle, the less trips you have to take. And so, you know, there's a way to go, okay, there's just room for a little bit more. If you've ever been to third world countries, you know what this looks like. Because when they have a cart, I know it, when you come across the border of Thailand into Cambodia, there's these guys that have these carts and they stack luggage on them. And they know they're going to make more money the more luggage they can stack. And they just pile it way up and it's teetering back and forth. And you go, that's way past capacity. But Jesus is talking to people whose lives feel that way. I've seen the record, I think I've seen, some, maybe it was in Vietnam or somewhere, but I saw a motor scooter with seven people on it, a family of seven. Little kid on the handlebars with his little brother on top of him, kids hanging off dad and mom. But it's like, if you have seven people in your family and you need to get somewhere, it's too expensive to buy two scooters. So you take one moto and you fit as many people as you can. I've seen people with one of those little scooters with several mattresses strapped over the top of them. Or in Cuba, I saw a guy with like probably 200 chickens all tied together and strapped to this moto. And if you see that, it's really funny, but how many people in their lives feel like they're that way? I just keep thinking there's more that needs to be done, and so I'm going to take that on. If that's you and you are overloaded, Jesus has something to say to you today that involves coming to him. But then, it's funny, he says, I will give you rest. That word there for rest means to hold up, literally, stop up. But it's a word that meant to be rejuvenated, to be refreshed. It means to stop and take a break. Now, again, stopping and taking a break is something that can only be appreciated by people who are doing stuff. If you don't work and don't want to work and aren't looking for work, you don't need a vacation, right? I mean, it's like your life is a vacation. But if you work hard, you need a vacation really bad. The funny thing is, the way we tend to, and the word vacation means to vacate, and yet what do we do? Because our mentality is productivity, we take a vacation, we have a list of all these things that we need to do on vacation. You know, don't you hate it when you go on vacation and the first day you wake up and somebody says, okay, what are we going to do today? That's not what vacation is. And so many of us cram our vacations with stuff that at the end of our vacation, we need a vacation from our vacation because we haven't really vacated at all. But the promise here is, if you come to me, I will give you a break. I will give you rest. I will restore and refresh you. And again, he's talking to people who are carrying too heavy of a burden. So, you know, you might want to wonder if when you get a vacation, you're thinking, oh, I just need to do a bunch of stuff. Actually, maybe you need to do a bunch of stuff before vacation so that you actually need a vacation. But Jesus is talking to them and saying, I'll throw the brakes on, and I'll give you refreshment. I'll give you enough to put you back in the race, to take you back to doing what it is that you need to do. But then he says a weird thing in verse 29, because he's promising rest to those who are overloaded. And then he says, take my yoke upon you. The word there for yoke literally was anything that would be connected to something else. One of the most basic uses of the word yoke was on a scale. That bar on the scale that connects to both ends of the scale, that was called the yoke. But they also had yoke where they connected oxen to other oxen so they could work together. But the yoke that he's probably using here is the yoke of a slave. It's the connection and the obligation due to the fact that someone else is leading you and you need to do what they say. The scriptures a lot in the Old Testament talk about the law being a yoke. Or it talks about countries that are you know, enslaving you, that you are under their yoke. So Jesus says something that a person who's worn out really doesn't want to hear. I got a yoke for you. It's like, I got enough yokes. I've got yokes from my family and yokes from my job and yokes from my past. Another yoke? I don't need it. Except what Jesus is saying is, take my yoke and let go of every other yoke. Take my yoke upon you. You cannot really wear more than one yoke. And if you are burned out, if you are worn out, probably carrying the wrong yoke is what he's saying. And his yoke is, learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart. Jesus wants us to learn from him more than anything else. It's one of the reasons why I'm excited about spending a year focusing on Jesus, talking to us, talking about himself, watching what he has to say. And by the way, in the youth classes that are going on right now for the whole year, they're going to be teaching and reflecting on the same sayings of Jesus that we are, because there's nothing that could be more important than to do that. Now, so Jesus says, learn from me. I have something to teach you. But look at the first thing that he says he wants to teach you. I'm gentle. That word there is a word that means I'm meek, I'm mild, I'm not pushy, I'm not asserting myself over you. I'm gentle. How many yokes do you have that are gentle? Not many. Because if someone's gentle, you go, okay, I guess you don't need me to do anything bad enough. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. But Jesus says, you got to understand, if someone's pushing you, it's not me. I'm gentle. And then he says, and lowly in heart. This is a word that's tough to translate. And so in the New King James, they did just what the King James did, lowly in heart. The actual meaning of this word is kind of disturbing. It is depressed. Yeah. That's weird. Jesus is going, look, I'm gentle and I'm depressed. It's like him saying, take my yoke and just be tired with me, be burnt out with me. But the word depressed is interesting because where the word originally meant pressed down, in their society and in their culture, the worst thing in the world is to be pressed down, to be humiliated. They saw that a person who is humiliated is finished. And our job is to be type A, assert myself, be what I, you know, what I ought to be, and I'll step on anybody else to get where I'm going. But Jesus, interestingly, came along and took this word that means to be humiliated and depressed, and he says, it's actually a virtue. Humiliation leads to humility. And being someone who has been crushed is actually something to be hugely admired. Because if you are not humiliated and you are not depressed at some point, you don't know what's going on. The truth is, there are a lot of reasons to feel that way. But Jesus says, you need to understand that that's me. My power is actually in my humiliation. When I am ultimately humiliated by being beaten and spit on and made fun of and stripped naked and nailed to a cross, the greatest moment in history will be that moment, followed right behind by the moment when I became a baby in a barn. Humiliation as something good? Jesus says, you need to figure this out. Because otherwise, when you are being humiliated, you're going to feel like something's really wrong. You're, you know, like Jesus, you're going to Bethsaida, and you're just like going, man, when I give them the stuff, it's going to change this town. There are so many people today that have this illusion. We can change our country. We can turn it around. We can do it. Jesus couldn't, even to the cities where he worked the hardest. But if we have that expectation, it's draining. If you're under the false assumption that if you raise your kids just right, they're going to automatically follow Jesus independently of their own choices, sorry, it doesn't always work that way, and you will feel terrible because you're going to go, okay, I know there's a formula, and I followed the formula, and I raised my kids the way I should, and now they hate me. I must have done something wrong. I must have failed. What Jesus is saying, you need to understand about me that a lot of times I do my best work in humiliation, in depression, in gentility, in not pushing for myself. I am not some pushy leader the way everyone that the world has is leading. And if you don't learn that, you're always going to be bummed. You're always going to feel like you're about to be crushed by the load because you've taken on an unrealistic load. I am gentle and I am humiliated, and you will find rest for your souls. What he's talking about here, the relief, is actually the answer to most of the pressure that we feel in life. It's not what we do that wears us out. There's a really good feeling from wearing yourself out doing things, and you feel like you're accomplishing something. When we work out, we go, that's a good kind of pain. As long as we accomplished what we set out to accomplish, then it's good. But if, what would your life be like if every day you're eating exactly the way you should, and you get up every morning and you're lifting weights and you're running and you're doing all this stuff, and you look in the mirror after a few months and you're like, I'm fatter than ever. Well, that's kind of the way that a lot of people live their lives. We have this expectation that if I do this, then I get to pick what the results are going to be. And you sometimes just find out, this isn't working out the way I thought it was. In fact, any of you who have ever served God in any capacity have begun to discover this. It's not exactly what you thought. Even when you had those romantic notions of, oh, having children is going to be so wonderful. It's just children are like flowers and butterflies, and you expect all this beauty to come into your life. And at first it does. It's really deceptive when the kids aren't old enough to really make your life miserable. You know, yeah, they poop every once in a while, but it's like you envision that you're going to be this close all the time. And as your kids grow up, they rebel. They don't treat you right. They never will appreciate you completely the way you should be appreciated. And so you're just going, man, I went through all that for this? I was deluded. But what Jesus is promising is, I can free you up from your expectations that are unfulfilled, because what you really need is rest in your soul. The soul is a word that the Bible uses a lot to refer to the immaterial part of you. The Greek word is psuche. When we say that someone is a psycho, some of the people you've dated in the past, it's, are you married? It means that this is a person who's really messed up inside. A psychologist or a psychiatrist tries to delve into your psyche and make it functional and straighten it out and help it out. The soul. Theologically, we say that the soul of man is basically their mind, what they think, their will, how they make choices, and their emotions, what they feel. Now, interestingly, often in Scripture, we see the spirit contrasted from the soul, but other places, we're seeing them joined together, because it's in our psyche that actually the Spirit comes, the Holy Spirit comes and leads us to renew our mind and to lead us in our will and to cause us to feel those things that he wants us to feel, like love and joy and peace. And so God wants to redeem our soul, but what Jesus is saying is your soul needs to take a break. Now here's how you know you are soul tired. You lay down after a long day and you're in bed and your mind is racing. Your soul is still working. Maybe even you go to sleep and you're wrestling with decisions that you have to make, or you're living with the pain of something from your past, or you're trying, you know, I hate when I wake up and I can tell, while I was sleeping, I know I was wrestling with a problem. Sometimes I can tell, I've been doing math in my sleep. Adding up, okay, if I do this, and you know, if I do sell this house, if I do, and we wear ourselves out even when we're supposedly resting. But what Jesus says, if you connect with me, I'll bring you to a point where your soul can truly rest. And I don't care what you think is wearing you out, it's your soul that is burdening you down. It's that mind, that will, that emotion. Those are the three most precious things that God gives us. Those are probably the areas. It's in our soul as to why God says that we are created in his image. Because the ability to think, the ability to process and make decisions, the privilege of choice, and then the ability to feel. Those are the best three qualities about us. Our soul is our treasure. Later on, we'll deal with the scripture where Jesus said, what good is it if you gain the whole world and you lose your soul, your psyche? But Jesus is saying, that's really your problem. You thought that it was your boss or your family or your expectations from the past or pain that you've endured, or people making demands on you, or the government taking more money from you and providing less services to you. You thought that was your problem. But Jesus says, really, all that stuff, what you really need to do is to have your soul refreshed. If you're fresh in your soul, it's amazing how much you can do. It's amazing what life can be like. But an unhealthy soul, an exhausted soul, someone who's so tired of thinking and feeling and deciding, is somebody who's just, you get up in the morning, you're already worn out. You go on vacation and you need another vacation. You think, I just slept for 12 hours and I feel like I could sleep another 12. Why? Because my soul is exhausted. And Jesus says, I will take your soul and I'll give it rest. I'll give you rest. You'll find rest for your souls when you take on my yoke. When you just decide, Jesus, what I want is what you have given me. I want to work with you. I want to work for you. And you unload everything that isn't Jesus, and then you do what Jesus is calling you to do, and you'll know you're doing that by the sense of refreshment that you have in your soul. That despite how hard your day is, despite how bad the circumstances are, you go, like the old song said, it is well with my soul. That's what Jesus wants to do for us. That's what he's inviting us to experience, is a healthy, blessed soul that is refreshed. We all need refreshment. We all need, you know, the word recreation, which we've turned into, oh, you gotta do. It's the word recreation. It's like starting over, hitting reset. Those of you who use Windows computers know very well what I'm talking about, because you have to do that on a regular basis. But it's like, okay, we're starting over. We're taking a break. We're going to stop a minute and go, Jesus, what do you want me to do? Now, I'll tell you something else. You were created, whether you know it or not, to serve God. Now, this seems, you don't even want to think about it, because you're already serving so many other people and so many other things that the idea that you need to also serve God is just another burden. Okay, throw it on the back and I'll do it. But the neat little secret is that the most refreshing thing that you'll ever do in your life is to do something for him. For those of you, for instance, who went with us down to Mexico to minister to the orphans, I know it took a Saturday, and I know it was demanding, and I know you had to wait for hours to get back across the border, and yet I would challenge you, talk to anyone who was on that trip, and they're ready to go back next week, because it's so enriching, it's so refreshing. And I was worn out before the day started, but I felt better after it was over, because my soul was refreshed. For some of you, you're not serving Jesus in any way. There's no ministry you're really involved in. Maybe you're burned out because you're not taking his yoke, because you're not connecting to him. Ask anyone who is serving God. Some of them maybe for the wrong reasons, because somebody pushed them into it. When you see someone who's serving God and they act like it's a burden, there's something wrong there. That's not what taking his yoke looks like. But ask the people who give their time to minister to the children or to greet you as you're coming in the church or to take sign-ups for things at the counter or to usher and help you get a parking place. And ask people like that, why do you do this? And you will see this sense of, because it's the best thing I do all week. Because I love having that opportunity. Maybe it's telling people about Jesus. Maybe it's just getting on your computer and sending an encouraging email. Maybe it's looking at our website at the prayer wall and praying for some people who are going through difficulties and need. If you do that, if you take his yoke, you'll find out, this is the best part of my life. It's actually refreshing. I have more energy after it's over than I did when I started. Now, I'll confess to you, not every conversation that I have ends up with me going, oh, that was such a good use of my time. Because sometimes it's just not that way. Sometimes you talk to people and they're just wasting your time. You need to listen to him, though, and be plugged into him, and he'll keep you from a lot of those time-wasting things. And you will find those serendipitous moments where there's this work of the Spirit and just an awesome time that you spent with someone. And usually those best times are when you're serving him in some way. It might be playing with your kids or your grandkids. It might be just going out and getting some exercise yourself or some relaxation. Hey, it might be laying on your sofa and watching a good football game. But whatever he leads you to do, you'll know it's him based on whether you see your soul being refreshed or not. If your life is burnt out, there's something you're doing wrong, because the life of being yoked to Jesus is a life of restoration. It's also a life of work. Again, you'll never appreciate rest unless you work a lot. The more you work, the more you appreciate rest. So Jesus is saying, you're overloaded. I have one more thing for you to do, and it trumps everything else that you do. Come to me and figure out how I am. And as you serve me, I will give your soul a rest. It's funny, sometimes when things go against what we expect, and I've had this happen plenty of times in my life where I just like pour my life into, you know, a program or into people, and then it totally backfires, and it's so frustrating because I had envisioned this great outcome, and then the outcome doesn't come. But I realize the blessing of actually having some things not work, because it always lifts a certain burden from you. Ultimately, that's his humility. That's his burden. It will always free you up. Often the things that you try to hang on to the tightest in life, when you finally lose them, you realize, man, that feels really good. Look at all the stuff you have and ask yourself, if it was stolen, if somebody's breaking into your house right now because they know you're some religious fanatic that goes to church every Sunday morning, so what if they stole a whole bunch of your stuff? How much of that stuff would you even have to buy back? Most people who get robbed are so excited because insurance will give them money and they don't need to buy the stuff. That's what Jesus is saying to us. Part of my humiliation is the removal of the things that are weighing you down, put as your only priority to be next to me, to be connected to me, to serve me. And something is going to happen in your soul that is best described as rest, reflection, recreation, restoration, that just that freshening of your whole mind and will and emotions. And then he explains in verse 30 why. Because my yoke is easy. Now, that word easy is a really bad translation here. And every commentator admits it, but very few translators have the guts to change it because people are going to freak out because it's not like the King James. But the word that's translated easy is a word most often translated useful, practical, of practical value. He isn't saying that following him and serving him is necessarily easy. But what he's saying is everything that happens to you is healthy. It's good for you. It has a good purpose, and it has a, you know, there is a, it fits in with his plan for you. So when he gives you something to do, sometimes it's not easy, but it's something that he goes, but this is going to be useful. Jesus would know about this because he endured human birth, and then ultimately he was sacrificed. Do you think that was easy? There's no way. It was incredibly hard. But the reason he did it is because it was worth it, because it was useful for us, because it was what would provide our healing. My yoke has a purpose to it. The thing that wears out your soul is when you do things and you feel like it didn't do you a bit of good. You made an investment, you lost it. You poured your life into someone, and they've rejected you. You tried to build a ministry, and it kind of went flat. You trusted in someone, and they let you down. But Jesus' yoke is always the one that says, I have a purpose to this. And if you take your orders from me, and you let me tell you what you should be doing, then every burden that you carry, you're going to be really glad you had it. I remember as a kid going backpacking, people would invite, oh, let's go backpacking. That always sounded really good, you know, looked good on John Denver albums and stuff. And so I'm dating myself. Naturally what I do, okay, you need food. So, and my friends who were really into backpacking, they'd bring all this freeze-dried stuff, or they would just go, hey, I just bring a frying pan, and after I catch fish, we'll fry the fish. I'm like, fish? Ugh. And so I'd bring good food, you know, like chili and things like that in cans. But my pack was so heavy, I could barely carry it. And after a while of backpacking, I realized those people with the little freeze-dried stuff, they're carrying things too, but they're carrying stuff that's actually worthwhile. In a sense, what Jesus wants to do is dump out your backpack. And he goes, you're not going to need this. You're going to need this. You're not going to need this. You're going to need this. And he makes it as functional as it can possibly be. And that's his heart for us, so that we don't wear ourselves out with unnecessary burdens that other people have put on us. My yoke is useful, and my burden is light. The word here is the same word that's used where it says you're heavy laden, except this time it's in the diminutive case. In other words, it's smaller. What he's saying is, the burden that I give you will not be overloaded. It'll be shrunk down and be the proper size. It's not going to be so small that you're not going anywhere for any purpose, but it's not going to be so big that stuff's going to be falling off of it all the time. Because here's what I want for you. So what is it that's wearing out your soul? What is it that consumes your mind, that frustrates your will, that plays havoc with your emotions? What is it? I want to tell you something. If you are finding yourself overloaded, then the problem is the yoke that you're carrying. Now, I'll tell you a few yokes that I know Jesus doesn't want you to carry. One of them is the yoke of pleasing other people. If you're carrying that, you know what a horrible, overloading burden it is, because you just can't please people. And if somebody is pleased with you, then somebody else is going to be angry with you. This week, I wrote a little note on my Facebook page because Ann and I went and saw Les Miserables. And I've read so many Christians who are like, oh, this is a beautiful redemptive story. And we're like, we think it was named properly. It made us miserable. And there's nothing more torturous than to watch, you know, actors who can't sing trying to sing. And it was just embarrassing, and it was long and involved. And so I just said that because everybody else is saying how great it is. I thought, well, I'll tell you what I think. I mean, and it's kind of funny because a lot of guys are posting after that and going, finally, thanks. I didn't want to go see it, and now I have a perfect excuse. Pastor Dave says it's miserable. But there are other people who are like, oh, how can you miss the theological significance of redemption and all this stuff? And now I'm in this deep conversation, and usually when people don't have a response, I explain to them. I go, look, Victor Hugo, who wrote Les Miserables, was raised in the Catholic Church but totally left the church, didn't like God, didn't believe in Jesus, denied the faith completely. He was French, so he was an existentialist. He followed Voltaire, and the point of Les Miserables is there is no redemption. So read your history, and then come and tell me what this thing means that's so redemptive. And the Christ figure in Les Miserables is the bad guy who kills himself, commits suicide. So I say that, and then people start going, well, do you know that Greg Laurie says it's good? Do you know that? And I feel like going, and then there are still people who are going, yeah, you tell them. We can always count on you to tell the truth. So I finally posted. I said, tomorrow I'm going to talk about why I hate puppies. Because, but that's what happens. You go, hey, Russell Crowe can't sing. And next thing, it's like, you're denying the faith because you don't see the gospel in an atheistic or deistic movie. Welcome to life. You will not please everyone. There are people in your life who, if you just say what you think, they're going to be against you. There are always people in your life who have their vision for your life. Some of them in your own family. Some of them were the parents who raised you. Some of them were the expectations of the school where you studied. But listen to me, you will never please people. So get that out of your head and make your goal to please Jesus, to take his yoke. Now, for some of you, your heavy burden may be that you've got yourself over your head financially, and you just can't make it, and you're going into debt deeper and deeper. And somehow you think something's going to rescue you. Is that a burden that you really want to carry? I know people who have finally let their house go, and they're like, boy, is that a load off my mind. Now, I know other people who let their house go for a while, and then the government stepped in and said, well, here's a better deal. Fine, either way, you let go of something, and you end up finding out that it wasn't as important and it wasn't worth carrying the burden. But I don't know what your burdens are. Maybe it's legalism. Maybe you are haunted by your sin and you feel like I can never be good enough. Maybe your burden is being addicted to a substance, whether it's drugs or alcohol or shopping or food or whatever. Maybe your burden is you feel horrible about indulging in those things. But whatever the burden is, I want you to understand, if your soul is worn out, if you're tired when you wake up in the morning, then Jesus is coming to you and saying, come here and just stand by me. Can you let go of all that and just say, I'm going to, on a daily basis, I just want to please Jesus. I just want to walk with him. I just want to serve him. It might be that as overwhelmed as you are, the missing piece is for you to offer to get involved in serving God in some way. Because at least one thing that you do in your life will matter for eternity. But whatever it is, Jesus is saying, I want your soul to be refreshed. And if it isn't, you're doing something wrong. If the burden that you are under is crushing you, then you're carrying a burden that isn't mine. Because mine is just the right size. And I don't take all your burdens, but they are manageable and they are useful. And what you will find is a rested soul in the process. The ability to stop and look at God's beauty and not be haunted by all the things you should be doing. The ability to put your head down on your pillow and go to sleep in peace. The rested soul. Jesus so wants to give that to you. And again, many of us are carrying a burden that is anything but manageable. It's anything but the right size. It's anything but useful. We're lugging worthless stuff. And he is speaking to you from the standpoint, again, contextually, of him going, believe me, I know what burnout feels like. I know that you have spent a lot of your efforts in directions that didn't pay off. You have failed to meet your own plans, dreams, and desires. I know that. I did too. John the Baptist, the greatest guy ever, did too. But he said, look, come to me. We'll talk about this. We will rectify this. I'll heal you. I'll refresh your soul. And that's what Jesus wants from you. Maybe you've been so driven to serve him that it's crushed you. That wasn't him. He doesn't do that. Maybe you feel like you've just been frantically trying to juggle all kinds of things in your life. Again, he says, come to me. I have a yoke for you. And it's not that. I am able to eliminate the things that are overloading you and just give you a simple, useful, productive burden. And that's what he has for us. I pray that this week, this is something that you'll think about as we're starting our series on Jesus. It's fundamental to everything that Jesus says. Are we going to let him tell us how to live? Are we going to just do what everybody else wants us to do, what we think we should do? Are we going to get our own vision and our own dreams and then do whatever it takes to complete it? At some point, life has a way of telling you, you need something, and it's not something more, it's something less, and something else. And that's what Jesus offers. Now, just a word to people who are here that have never even accepted Jesus. You've never taken on his yoke. For most of us, we've taken his yoke and a bunch of other people's yoke too. But if you've never responded to Jesus' invitation, then the truth is the burden that you are feeling is really tragic, because you are basically wasting your life away. And I can tell you, and anyone can tell you from experience, whatever it is that you're living for, if you're not living for Jesus, it's going to leave you cold and empty and tired and burnt out, because there isn't anything that will that has your best interests in mind. Everyone in this world is trying to use you. It's only Jesus who says, come to me. What I want to do is to let your soul be refreshed and restored. So if you've never come to him, you've never responded to him, that can start over today. There'll be people back in the back of the sanctuary, right back in that corner. They'd love to pray with you, to introduce you to Jesus Christ. And what you can do is take all the junk that's been weighing on you and leave it in the back, and walk out of here with a gentle and humble person who is saying, I have your best in mind. I want to refresh you. If you follow me and do what I tell you to do, you're going to find that it's exhilarating, that it's renewing, that it's restoring. Your psyche will be healed when you just decide that my opinion is all that matters to you. So if you don't know him, go back there and get to know him. It'll change everything. You're going to feel so free. But then, don't just go take on a bunch of load. Okay, now I'm a Christian. What do I need to do? This. I can't do that. That's not Jesus. Anyone who is pushing you to try to motivate you so that they can tell you how you should live, they're not listening to Jesus. Come to him. Let go of all the other stuff. He'll show you. He'll show you what it is that he wants you to do. And the way you'll know it's him is you will find times of refreshment and renewal while you're in the middle of it all. You'll be tired, but you won't be overloaded. What you do will have a purpose. So I pray that all of us this week will take that to heart. And again, if you don't know Jesus, head to the back and you can meet him today.